Out of the black of the deep range and into the light of the deep strange, cometh the hour, cometh the mothership that is Coast to Coast AM. Good evening to you, John B. Wells in the Saturday night chair. And what a wild and wacky week it has been. Don't you think? Shout out to the entire city of Boston for letting me invade your turf last Monday. I did something I've never done in my life. A morning show. Yes? Sitting in for Jeff Cooner on WRKO 680 in Boston, who's carrying Coast to Coast AM, a beloved affiliate. So thanks a lot. Had a good time, and everybody was very, very nice. Nice to me. Let a southerner into an eastern town and do his thing for 4 hours. Talk with a lot of nice people. Have a program I think you're going to enjoy. One of the guests tonight has been on the program before. That would be Larry Kelly. He's coming up after a while. He was with us on January 12 of this year. You remember his book, Lessons from Fallen Civilizations. And I quote his titles, his chapter titles, such as Immutable Law Number 1. No nation has ever survived once its citizenry ceased to believe its culture worth saving. And there are several other immutable laws in there, too. We'll talk with him for a couple hours. And first, we welcome to the Coast to Coast family a first-time guest, Skip Coriel. He has a couple of books out there, Blood in the Streets and The God Virus. And let me just give you the website, Skip Coriel, SKIPCORYELL.com. And SecondAmendmentMarch.com is also one of his sites. And Larry Kelly, he's at LarryKelly.com, LarryKelley. So put an EY on Kelly and leave the Larry alone, LarryKelly.com. Anyway, boy, looking at the news, it's just nuts. We got Hong Kong braced for Super Typhoon Usagi. Big time typhoon heading their way. It's unbelievable. Let's go over to the Coast to Coast AM.com website. Looking for Bigfoot, there's a map that shows where to search. Shape-shifting UFO filmed over Belfast. And speaking of UFOs, I got a couple of photographs from Wilbur Allen. Remember Wilbur Allen and his website UFO DC. He's a professional photographer, Nat Geo, Air Force One under the Clinton administration, so forth. The official photographer, I believe. And this stuff is just, anybody who has any idea at this point that UFOs are not real, sorry, they are. It's just becoming more and more obvious all the time. I mean, just like it's just right out there. It's not even woo-woo anymore. It's like, oh, no, absolutely, positively. There's too many people in government, too many people in the military, too many instrument panels shut down, too many nuke sites turned on and then turned off just in the nick of time, and too many nuclear warheads disarmed and rearmed, and then 2 weeks later, another base gets theirs, their nuclear-tipped warheads disarmed and deactivated, so it's great. And I urge you to check out this program that I have the privilege of pleasure of narrating, which is Unsealed Alien Files. You can find it where it plays in your municipality by just going to unsealedalienfiles.com/schedule, and there it will be. And I am sure you will like it as it becomes more and more obvious to me that we're about to meet them. Okay, so Hellstorm heads for Hong Kong. A study reveals life on Earth has another 1.75 billion years to go. So that even trumps what Tina Turner sang in One of the Living. Let's see. Homeland is set to test facial recognition system. Doctors say antipsychotic meds overused. Oh, you think? Have you just noticed that so many SSRI drugs seem to be in the bloodstreams of people who do these mass shootings? And speaking of which, according to InfoWars, the first responders' radios failed during the Navy Yard shooting. You know, it's easy to think there's a conspiracy behind every bush, but how does a guy in Fort Worth, Texas, who's trying to be a Buddhist, wind up with a, let's shoot a bunch of people up at the Navy Yard in Washington, while the mainstream media cries out moronic phrases like, it was an AR-15 shotgun. It was an AR-15 shotgun. This obsession with the AR-15. Got to ask yourself a question. Would you rather have somebody pop off around at you from a small rifle like that, or would you want Bubba, who's an expert in the operation of his deer rifle, pop a cap off at you with that thing? I mean, just think about it and then forget about it. Let's see what else we have. Well, George Norrie was on The View on Thursday. Wells on Boston Radio this past Monday. Bells all over the place. It's unbelievable. It's wild. What's next? Dogs and cats living together, as Bill Murray said in Ghostbusters. Yeah. An Egyptian was arrested for naming a donkey after a general. And I'll tell you, there's a guy named Larry. And he sent me an email with a link to his site. And it's called, You Can't Make This Stuff Up. Not you can't, but you can't. And here's a couple of good ones. This is real stuff. 850 snakes found in home of New York animal control officer. Men prank friend by plumbing home with beer in best prank ever. That's in New Zealand. NASA will pay $18,000 to watch you rest in bed. Really, looking for volunteers to lie in bed for 70 days. Now, that might be hard on various parts of your body, but you could get paid a total of around $18,000 for lying in bed, playing games on your phone, reading books, Skyping with your friends and family, taking online classes. You can even go to your day job. You can get away with working remotely, so long as you don't get out of bed for 70 days. Thousands welcome giant rubber duck to Taiwan. It's frightening. It looks scarier than the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man in Ghostbusters. It does. I think this would worry me more than any UFO landing on the yard. And yes, wedding delayed after man hacks off own testicles and storms church. Well, that's in Brentwood, England. It's not uncommon for the planning of a wedding to cause a certain amount of stress, but really. And last but certainly not least, yes, George Soros is getting married. Billionaire investor George Soros, 83, will marry 42-year-old Tamiko Bolton today. That's as of September 20th. Couple will have said their vows in front of a select group of friends and family before they celebrate with hundreds. George Soros, she's 42, he's 83, which just goes to show you that no matter how evil, how corrupt, how overly connected, how unattractive or how unappealing you may be, someone will sleep with you, provided there's a nice, thick wallet there. Is that cynical? I'm sorry. Not really. This is Coast to Coast AM. We'll be right back with our first guest. He's a first-time guest. He is Skip Coriel. Stand by. Here it comes. Skip Coriel works full-time as a professional writer. He's a Marine Corps veteran and a graduate of Cornerstone University. He has also served on the board of directors for Michigan Sportsmen Against Hunger, as well as Iowa Carry Incorporated. He is a certified NRA pistol instructor, chief range safety officer, teaching the personal protection in the home course for those wishing to obtain concealed pistol permits. He also teaches advanced concealed carry classes for the more seasoned shooter. He's the president of White Feather Press and co-owner of Midwest Tactical Training. He's also the founder of the Second Amendment March. Welcome to the program, Mr. Coriel. It's good to have you with us.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, so tell us about Second Amendment March. You know, we're going to talk about what happens when society's rather thin veneer of civility is stripped away after the people give up their rights. So tell us a little bit about you and what motivated you to get into this line of work, and then let's get into this thin veneer that is liable to be stripped away following the stripping away of more of our rights.
Sure. Yeah, the Second Amendment March, that's an organization that I founded back in 2009. It's a national-level organization, and what we wanted to do was to have a national pro-gun rally at the Washington Monument. And we did that. It took us about 17 months to get that planned and organized and raise all the money to do that. And it was just a really big deal for me. I had to put my company on hold to do that, and do hundreds of interviews, like I'm doing right now to do that. But it was a good time. It was worthwhile. We ended up with thousands of people there at the Washington Monument. With speakers and guests, and it was just really cool. And since then we still do state level marches all over the country, several times a year. We have another one coming up in October here in my home state of Michigan. But Second Amendment activism, that's pretty much, it's like my very intense hobby that I do, just fighting to keep the God-given right to keep and bear arms in Michigan and across the country. So that's pretty much the Second Amendment March in a nutshell.
What do you how's the reception to your initiative generally?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good. There was always a. It's really hard to get people motivated. People these days, it's like they're so focused on, important things like, Simon Cowell and, Facebook and Twitter and, their soap operas. It's hard to get them motivated, about anything that's not about them.
Yep.
That was pretty much my experience. Even the pro-gun community, which tends to be a tight-knit group, it was hard to motivate them. To get up off their butts and to fight and defend their own rights. So, but we did do it. It just took a lot of work, more work than you would have, imagined. Even groups like the NRA, the NRA is like this huge ship, that's going through the water, and to try and turn them or get them to do anything was really, really tough. It turned out okay, but oh man, it was a challenge. It was the hardest thing that I've ever done in my life, but it was also the most rewarding thing. I learned a lot, and I made a lot of really good friends, during the Second Amendment March. So it was great.
Skip, this Second Amendment thing is a real hot button issue, to use that unfortunate term. It's just one everybody understands the meaning of through osmosis, if not from the content of the words themselves. Why do you think there is such a why do you think people are so divided on this issue? I think the majority of people, it's just my opinion, that the majority of people feel that, well, certainly you should have the right to defend yourself. Even in martial arts, it's rule number one is avoid. The second rule is block. The third rule is, okay, that's twice. You can go ahead and attack now. But number one is avoid. And we know that there are people who will do us harm. They'll do it. They'll do it for sport. They'll do it for gain. They'll do it because they're having a bad day. And still, when something like, an Aurora shooting or a Newtown shooting or a Navy Yard shooting occurs, here come the predictable crew of politicians who just insist we must have more gun control, and no one should have an AR-15, no one should have this, and then this Vice President Biden with get a shotgun and just fire through the door. It's like I would challenge anyone to defend that kind of nonsensical advice. So what do you think is the source of the opposition? I mean, what do you think is the real What is the meaning behind the opposition to an individual citizen being able to defend themselves with a firearm? It doesn't seem to be that big of a deal to me.
I think it's a couple of things. The first one being, I think most people are sheep, by nature. Their personalities are very sheep-like. They don't want to be bothered with things. They want to feel safe. It's more important for them to feel safe than to actually be safe. And if they don't feel safe, then they just get all skittish and they go spastic and they want someone to protect them. If they're in denial, You know, the sheep are out there, they're grazing, you know, they're going on the hillside. And if someone tells them that there's danger about, they just freak out because they know that they're not qualified to defend themselves. And that's part of it. I think the other part is more sinister, and that's about control. You know, because if you look, you know, over the 20th century, you know, you go back at all of the genocides that we had in the past century, you know, whether it's, you know, Mao Zedong or Stalin or Hitler or, you know, Pol Pot, all of them, you know, the first thing that they had to do is they had to turn the people into sheep, you know, a sheepification of society before that they could work their will and have their way with their society. And I see that happening in America these days. I mean, on the one hand, yeah, it seems obvious you should be able to defend yourself. But, you know, how can you defend yourself against someone, you know, with a shotgun or a pistol if you have bare hands? I mean, it's not a fair fight. You just can't do it. And, you know, just it frustrates me. I was speaking with someone a couple days ago, and they were talking about hoplophobia, you know, an irrational fear of guns. And they referred to it as a type of insanity where, you know, they just can't, they don't understand it. And quite frankly, I don't understand it either. I mean, you know, I'm not a sheep. I have more of a warrior mindset. You know, for me, it's like it's all about defending myself and defending my family and any innocent person who happens to be in my sphere of influence. That's the way that I think. And it just seems that there's a general lack of warrior mindsets willing to stand up, you know, against evil. And I do believe that evil does exist. It lives among us. It breathes among us. And you have to be ready to combat evil, to resist evil at any given moment in your life. And if you're caught off guard, it could very much mean that you forfeit your life because you're not prepared, you just fall short. You don't have the training or the will or the desire to fight and defend your life or the life of your loved ones. So that's part of it. It's always frustrating for me to talk to you know, anti-Second Amendment people, anti-gun people, because, you know, I don't understand a mindset that will say, yes, you can't have the right to defend yourself. It angers me, but it also just frustrates me, you know, to no end on that one. But I'll never.
Well, and there's such a hypocrisy to it too, because all the people who are wanting you to give up your ability to protect yourself are very heavily armed, not only themselves, but they have people around them who are also heavily armed. So the question is, what exactly are they afraid of? Are they afraid that evil is going to be visited upon them? And if so, well, now why would somebody want to do a thing like that to a politician? Mm-hmm. Right?
Politicians. That's probably a whole segment. I can't stand politicians. You know, I don't know, maybe 30 years ago, politician wasn't a dirty word to me, but nowadays it is. I cannot respect people who will look me in the face and just lie. I mean, they know that they're lying. I know that they're lying. But because they get cover from the mainstream media or, you know, society in general, they just do it. And it's like, hold on, we know that you're lying. I know that what you're saying is a lie. You know, so why are you doing it? That's disrespectful. I don't understand that level of disrespect. I don't like it. I don't like politicians. Politics in general is just very, very dirty. It's like, you know, politics. Do I want to get involved in politics? Yeah. Do I want to go, you know, bathing in a septic tank? Well, no, I don't want to do that either. But yeah. Politicians. Oh gosh, they're right up there, you know, with demons and cobras and
yeah,
and
certainly some of them are. And the thing about it is sometimes they know that you know that they're lying, and they don't care about that either.
That's for sure.
Well, I'll tell you what, you've got a couple of books here. The God Virus, it's very interesting, and it is propitious that we should talk about this tonight, because people are very concerned over this grid down exercise that's supposed to occur in November. And your novel, The God Virus, the U.S. power grid is taken out by a cyber terrorist attack and people are forced to live without electricity. I wonder how that would go over. We'll be right back after a few commercials and a few things, a couple of good tunes coming your way, stuff like that, just to keep the Saturday night rolling with a new guest, first-time guest. That's Skip Coriel. Check out his website while we wait, skipcoriel.com. Second Amendment Watch. Pardon me, wrong. Second Amendment March.com. This is Coast to Coast AM. You know, it's very interesting. A listener just sent an email. Thanks very much, Sean. I appreciate it. About Philip Taylor Kramer. He was a bass guitar player for the rock group Iron Butterfly before, I guess it must have been Lee Dorman, who passed away in December 2012. Anyway, after he obtained a night school degree in aerospace engineering, he worked on the MX missile. And apparently met a strange and untimely end. So I want to look into that a little bit. And that's an excellent heads up, Sean. I appreciate that very much. You know, somebody else sent an email that says, John, I have a right to go to the mall and have a reasonable expectation of not being shot by a psychotic who bought a military weapon over the internet or at a gun show. Okay, well, I got some news for you. First of all, you do have a reasonable expectation of not being shot by a psychotic who bought a military weapon over the internet. Because first of all, you can't do that. And anybody thinks that you can buy military weapons over the internet and it's going to be delivered to your door so that you can go to the mall and go psychotic is out to lunch, misinformed, uninformed, and ignorant. Sorry, but that's just how it is. Anything that's purchased over the internet must go to what? A licensed gun dealer. And before the thing is even shipped to the licensed gun dealer, and that's where it will be shipped, the licensed gun dealer must send a copy of their federal firearms license to the company that's going to be doing the shipping. They will then call the customer when it arrives. The customer will come and fill out a federal form, and you better not lie on it. Then, unless they have a license for concealed carry, which shortens the process only to the extent that the FBI will not be called, and while the customer waits, the FBI does a background check on them right then. They may be delayed. They may be cleared right away, and they may be delayed a few days and have to come back. Then, and only then, will the military weapon, and first of all, that's wrong, too. You can't buy military weapons over the internet. These, you know, there's so much misinformation out there and ignorance. Military weapons are for the military. You can't have army guns in your possession. Now, you can have stuff that is modified or through special licensing, it comes close to military weapons, but there are things called destructive devices, and without extraordinarily expensive licenses, with $10,000 fees on each item that you have, you can't have this stuff. So when people say, well, it's a military-style assault rifle, what does that mean? It could mean anything from somebody took out some green and brown and paint and painted it camo. Now it's tactical, man. It's military. No. And you do have a reasonable expectation to go to the mall. But I'll remind you of this. There was a young lady whose parents were killed by a psychotic who went crazy some years ago at a cafeteria in Texas. And this was the one occasion that she left her pistol in the car rather than bringing it with her, because in those days it was not legal for Texas citizens to have a concealed carry permit. It didn't exist. And we don't have permits in Texas. We have a license, which is a different thing altogether. She had to watch her father be shot, and then her mother, who was not about to leave her father, she had to watch her be shot also. If she had had her pistol, she would have taken the psycho out right then. Look, your safety is up to you. If you rely on someone else to save you, you're out on the clothesline and your chances are not that good. In other words, when seconds count, remember, the police are only minutes away. We'll be right back with Skip Coriel. This is Coast to Coast AM. Skip Coriel, see? Well, we share the same views, and there's no doubt about it. Some people just cannot be shifted from their opinions. I mean, there are those who think, citizens shouldn't have guns. The authorities will take care of us. It's like, oh, they'll take care of you, all right. All you have to do is read a couple of history books, if you can read. And there are people like yourself and people like, I don't mind saying, myself, who are like, no, that's all right. We'll take care of ourselves. You know?
Yeah. I'm of that mind. I've got a 40 caliber Glock right next to me right now, and my personal creed, basically, my rule is, when I'm out and about, I've got to have a loaded gun in my hand within 2 seconds. When I'm home, I give myself 5 seconds, just because I like to relax when I'm at home. But you know, that's what I teach. I teach people how to protect themselves, and I'm getting more and more people, you know, coming to my classes. I tell you, 10 years ago, I would have a class of maybe 10 people for concealed carry, maybe one woman in the class. Now, I just had one last week with 30-plus people, and over a third of them were women, and that's more typical now. Women are taking classes. Older people, retired people, never touched a gun in their life. Now they're coming out of the woodwork, and they just don't feel safe anymore. And go figure.
Well, you know, there's a mentality out there that that dictates to the persons who hold them that, well, these gun people are just they're just looking for an excuse to go off on somebody. These are violent people that are just looking for an excuse to pull out that pistol and shoot, and nothing could be farther from the truth.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's for sure. I mean, you know, when you look at any of my classes, I mean, they're just normal people. I mean, they're farmers, they're doctors, they're, you know, they're lawyers, dentists, you know, they're just normal, everyday people from all walks of life. And, you know, when you listen in on a class, we'll talk about use of deadly force. You know, when can you shoot? When can you not shoot? And that's the legal concern. But there's also the moral concern. You know, should you shoot? Or do you have to shoot? And, you know, we always refer to it as a firearm is a tool of last resort. You know, it's and I teach that. Personal protection, 90% of personal protection has nothing to do with a firearm. It has to do with, you know, your gray matter, what's between your ears and how you use it. But there are times when you can be the smartest man in the world, but if you don't have that firearm, you're going to die. And when the crap hits the fan, hey, don't be in front of the fan. You know, be behind it with a firearm so that you can protect yourself and the people that you love. That's the way it is.
Well, not only that, I mean, and not to, I say not only that, as if, well, this is more of, no, you're exactly right. And more to your point, what has happened to this society? The society was not always this horrible, violent thing where there's murder on practically every street corner, and no small community is free from this. I mean, there have always been, you know, the free radicals out there that are, they're going to do something wrong no matter what. But it seems to me that the society has just shifted. Mm-hmm. For example, people who were clearly insane, and what I mean is they clearly demonstrated antisocial, even sociopathic tendencies. These people were institutionalized. Well, there's no money in institutionalizing somebody, so you just fix them up with some SSRI drugs. I mean, has it just escaped everyone's attention that these mass shooters, virtually all of them, were on psychotropic drugs? So you just fix them up with some drugs and send them right back out into the society, and then you wonder why they go off and harm a bunch of people. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, seize the guns. It's the guns that's the problem. No, it's the insane people who need to be institutionalized, you've released back into the public. That's the problem.
Well, I think half of them end up in Washington, D.C. as our representatives, but that's another story.
Good case could be made for it, yep.
Yes. You know, I think our society, you know, when I'm 56 years old now, when I grew up in the, you know, 60s, early 70s, you know, in a rural setting. You know, no one locked their doors. I mean, no one did. And I would, you know, everyone knew their neighbors, everyone knew everybody else, and it was the same way in the city to a large degree. But you felt safe. I mean, there were a few people that were off, but you knew who they were. You knew how to deal with it, and they didn't run around shooting people. But a lot has happened. I think the 60s was just pivotal. Something happened to our social fabric during the 60s. And when you look back at the 60s, you know, the things that were going on at that time, I mean, you had the proliferation of drugs and alcohol. You had a breakdown in the moral fabric of our society. You know, I grew up on things like Leave It to Beaver and the Andy Griffith Show. My kids are, you know, growing up, you know, with Beyonce and, you know, Miley Ray Cyrus and all the stuff, the garbage that's out there right now. I mean, we have thrown our television out of our house. And, you know, I have a 2-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a 7-year-old, and a couple of teenagers, and I won't even let them watch that stuff. And I monitor what's on their computer very, very heavily, because I do believe that what you put into a child, you are making a child. And there's a lot of stuff happened in the 60s and early 70s, and it wasn't overnight. It happened little by little by little. And, you know, we're seeing the end result. We're close to the end result right now. You know, you talk about our politicians. You know, it used to be, you know, you'd listen to maybe a political debate, and you say, okay, I can listen to their views. I want to find out what they think and what they believe, and what's important to them. Now, why even listen to a debate? Because they're lying to you anyways, and they have you know, an army of people that are making their personalities and their public relations people. You don't know who you're voting for until they get in office and you can actually see what they do. And by then, it's too late. And I don't mean to sound, defeatist or anything like that, but, you know, the system is broken. You mentioned earlier about the psychotropic drugs, and that is just so right. I mean, where did all these mentally ill people come from, and what is making these people mentally ill? I mean, I don't have the answer. But you can just look at it and say, you know, every single time someone goes off the, off their nut and starts shooting people, you know, they've got these drugs in their system, and you know, just all kinds of stuff. And you know, they like the Call of Duty video games, violent video games, and all that stuff. And you know, a quote unquote normal person can handle that stuff, but there's a lot of people out there that aren't normal anymore.
Well, you know, it's like this old criminal lawyer out of Chicago told me one time, and he said it in just these words. You take a rock dumb moron and give him drugs, sit him in front of a television set, and let him absorb those images for a few years, and just see what happens.
Yeah, yeah. Have you ever seen that movie called Idiocracy?
Oh yeah.
Oh, you know, it was a prophecy. It's coming true. In our own society, we are all so dumbed down, you know, that phrase, a low information voter.
Oh, yeah.
You know, change that to no information voter or bad information voter, and I think it's more accurate. I can't believe some of the people that we elect. And, you know, our founding fathers, one of the things they said, you know, we've given you a republic, you know, if you can keep it. And they went on to say, you know, you will only be able to keep this form of government, you know, and a free society, if your society is well informed, and if they have moral scruples, moral standards, and moral values. And that's what's happened to us. We don't have moral values anymore, and that's been kind of a slippery slope that we've been on, and it's getting worse and worse and worse. You know, I feel like I'm living in Sodom and Gomorrah. You know, when I turn on the television or even, you know, watching the news. So it's just, it's a frustrating thing for me because there's no quick, easy fix for it. You know, people like to think, well, you know what, we'll fix it in the next election cycle.
Sure.
You know, you're not going to fix it in the next election cycle because it took us decades to get where we are right now.
It's systemic.
Oh.
You know, and it's interesting. You know, Skip, you just said we've lost our moral values. Here's the thing. This is where I have to invoke the Matrix term.
Okay.
I believe that we do have moral turpitude. I believe we do have moral values, but we are operating on two levels. when you sit in front of a television set and you observe human behavior being conducted, you are making choices in your head as to which of these behaviors you are attractive to you, which ones you might want to adopt yourself. In fact, you could probably form an entire code for living based on what you watched. So what we're being presented continuously is that, you know, hey, self-pleasuring, to avoid the M word, self-pleasuring is fun, sin is fun, but what they leave out is but there's payback for that.
Yeah.
Sure, it's fun to go to the party, it's fun to do this, it's fun to abuse that, it's, oh, take all the drugs you want, drink all you want, oh, yeah, it's a great time for everybody, eat, drink, and be merry, but there's payback for that. So we're operating on two levels. Innately, we understand that we have to have some morals or there will not be a civilization that is recognizable as such. And at the same time, we know this, and yet what we observe, what is being presented to us as representative of what we are, there's the conflict. Is what I'm feeling inside what I really am, or is what is being portrayed on the screen what I really am?
Yeah, for sure. In literature, a fellow writer, you know, we were talking about this years ago, and she said, you know, you look, I can write literature the way the world is, or I can write the way the world should be. And, you know, of course, every artist is going to write it a little differently because they have a different idea of how the world should be. But, you know, I tend to do both. I mean, I look at the world and I say, okay, this is the way the world is, and I'll write it, but I'll also interject, you know what, this is the way the world is, but is it possible that there's a better way to do this? And you hit on a real important point when you talked about selfishness, self-centeredness. And that's, we have a choice whether or not we are selfish or whether or not we choose to help our fellow man and be a servant. And my own personal creed, whether, you know, it comes out in my novels or in my everyday life, is I want to be a servant to my fellow man. And that's part of what's missing, because it's all about me in our society right now. You know, I want my moment of fame, my flash in the pan, you know, my piece of fame and fortune and empire. And it's not supposed to be that way. I mean, yeah, if you want barbarism and, you know, that thin veneer of society to go away, yeah, go ahead and be selfish. We can all be selfish, and it'll be, you know, tooth, fang, and claw along the law of the jungle. But it's not supposed to be that way, and when we make the world that way and perpetuate that kind of society, we're handing that off to our kids and our grandkids. And, you know, you get older and you just think, did I do the right things? Could I have done better? What am I leaving to posterity? And if we're just, we need to be a less selfish society. You know, what was that? John F. Kennedy, he said, ask not what you can do for your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. You know, expand that out to, you know, humanity. What can you do for humanity? It's not all about you or me. It's about humanity. It's about the universe, and how can we help each other? And that's what I try to write about. I try to write about that. When someone reads my book, I want them to get done with it and say, wow, that was cool. I had a great time, and you know what? I'm going to think about some things and maybe become a better person because I read this book. And if I can't write a book like that, it's not worth writing.
Let me ask something, Skip, about your book, the God Virus. That's your first one, yeah?
That's the first in this particular series, the God Virus and the Shadow Militia. Those are two novels in a four-book series that I'm doing right now.
Why did you happen to pick? We're going to have to take a break here in about a minute and a half. But just give us a little teaser here. What got you interested in writing a novel about the U.S. power grid being taken down?
Oh, boy. Well, you know what? When it comes to societal collapse, there are millions of different ways that you can do it. And as far as the grid down scenario, I saw it as a, like, when I did my research, I just saw that the American power grid was fragile, but I also saw that there's a lot of people out there that want to take down the U.S., and they can do it through computers, with our own system. It was very fragile, and I thought it was a likely thing that could come about. So that's basically it.
Well, I'll tell you what, when we come back, let's get into that in a little more detail, particularly since we have this GridX exercise that involves Canada, Mexico, and the United States coming up in November. There are things afoot, ladies and gentlemen, but there is nothing to fear. No problems, only solutions. This is Coast to Coast AM.